Well, you guys, we are talking today, week four of the series that we're in, Self-Propelled Discipleship, and we've been having some great time together, kind of looking into this idea that Paul talks about in the New Testament, about the difference in our maturity between us drinking spiritual milk or eating spiritual meat. And if you think about the kind of running analogy we've been talking about is that babies need someone else to feed them, but as we grow up, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? That's part of the process, but as we grow up, we start to take on responsibility for feeding ourselves. That's true in a physical sense. It's also true in a spiritual sense. And so this series, Self-Propelled Discipleship, is about us taking steps of maturity to grow up spiritually and learn how to do the practices, the spiritual practices of actually keeping ourselves healthy and eating, to use the analogy, eating spiritually. So we've been talking about different practices. Week one, I talked about just the concept of practices. And then over the last 2 weeks, we've talked about Bible reading and prayer. Today, I want to take us into a third practice, and I want to talk to us about Sabbath. And Sabbath is more than a day off. It's different than just a day to chill. It is deeply, deeply spiritual. And I want to lean us into that today. It's this idea of resting and restoring or delighting. We'll talk about that. But I want to start out with a quote. Dallas Willard says this. He says, "Hurry is the enemy of spirituality in our modern life. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." And when we look at this idea of Sabbath, I really was thinking about life. I was thinking about your life and my life. And I think in our culture nowadays, we lack in two areas specifically. We probably lack in a lot of areas, but think about this for a moment. Two areas where we lack in our current culture. Number one is rest. We're absolutely exhausted. You know, when you talk to people and you're like, "How you doing?" And they're like, I'm busy." It's like, you know, how are you? I didn't ask if you're busy. I asked how you are, like, how's your soul? You know, that's a different question. But the way we answer that is, well, I'm busy. We're just exhausted. We're really, really busy. We're really exhausted. So we lack in rest. And then another thing is that a lot of us lack in actually being present wherever we are. We're in the future. We're in the past. We're thinking about the next thing. For some of us who are parents, our kids come up and ask us something and we're answering, but we're not really even listening. You know what I mean? If you're a parent, you know exactly what I mean. And so this idea of those are the things we lack in. And I think as we move through life, those kind of things, they start kind of as a hurt or a wound where it's like, it's a little bit hurt. That's a little bit messed up. I'm a little bit busy. And as we keep going, that eventually turns into scar tissue and we start to lose sensitivity and we start to lose connection and sensation to our life. And we find ourselves going through the motions and kind of this drab, dry, exhausted, lack of joy kind of experience. And thankful for us, right? God actually knows how we work and operate, and He set aside for us a way for us to live where that doesn't happen. And so again, that's what we're talking about today. And in our current culture, I think we need to take countercultural steps to practice spiritual disciplines. And that's what we're going to talk about today, Sabbath. So here we go. I got a couple points for you today. And then after the kind of principles, I want to give you some practices. I want to give you some very tangible concepts. So I've got three points and then four practices for us. And then I'm going to share a scripture with us at the end and I will pray over us and we'll close. So just some ideas about Sabbath. I've got three of them for you. So as you're taking notes, you can write these down. Also, this week is a little bit unique because this is our, as you guys already know, this is our in-person. And so some of us right now are meeting at the MSU Horticultural Gardens together. And for those of us that are watching online, I'm actually going to post these notes right in our phone app. So if you've not yet downloaded the phone app, make sure you do that. These notes will be there as well, and you can take them if you do not have the phone app. So number one is that the Sabbath is holy. And holy is an interesting word. So I kind of wrote here otherworldly and set apart. So holy is something that isn't just in our world. It's otherworldly and it's actually set apart. It's unique. It's established differently. In Exodus 20, verse 11, the Bible says, "For in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth and the sea and all that's in them and rested the seventh day. Wherefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day," that's the seventh day, and then check this out, "and He hallowed it," or He made it holy, He set it apart. So there's this idea, even in the scripture, and we're going to look at this in just a second, but from the very beginning, God sets up a pattern of rest for us, the Sabbath rest for us, and it says that He worked for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, He rested, and then it says, again, Exodus 20:11, Wherefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. It's set apart. It's something unique and different. Now, what's the history, kind of the meaning of sabbatical or sabbatical Sabbath? What does that mean? But it is the root word for sabbatical as well. And it's this idea of resting and delighting, resting and delighting. And so I'm going to just give you a kind of a fly through of a whole lot of scripture here. But if you start in the very beginning of the Bible, in the book of Genesis, what you see is you see that God, it says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He speaks everything into existence. And at the end of day one of creating, it says he steps back from his creation, his producing. And it says, he says, it's good. He delights over it. And then day two, he creates and he delights over it. And day three and so on and so on. On day six, he creates men and women. He creates humanity. And then on day seven, it says that God rested. He stops producing. He stops creating. He rests. And it's really interesting because God didn't need to rest. He's God. He's not exhausted. He didn't need to rest. But he rests to set a pattern for us. He creates us on the sixth day, and then on the seventh day, he introduces this idea of rest. Again, a God that never sleeps, but actually installs a pattern of rest. It's really interesting because, and we'll talk about this more in a minute, but we think that resting has to do with I'm tired. No, resting has to do with a godly pattern that's holy. It's something that he set apart for us. God didn't need to rest. He set a pattern for rest. And so he creates Adam and Eve on the sixth day. Then he rests. The first day of humanity is actually a day of rest, which is really interesting. And then as you follow the lineage of God's people, what you see is God makes a covenant with Abraham. And then you see that lineage move into Joseph. And then you see Joseph go into Egypt. And then you see over a couple generations, Egypt actually enslaves God's people. And for 400 years, God's people are actually slaves. They actually work around the clock. They are people who don't know how to rest because they're not given permission to rest. And so what happens is that God's people get into this pattern where they're working all the time. It's forced work. It's forced production. And it's a people that never stop working. They're a never stop working kind of people. And so that's what we have. And we have that for 400 years. And then, as you guys know the biblical story, and if you don't, you can read about it in the book of Exodus, but God actually brings his people out of slavery and they go into the desert and they are wandering in the desert and God is actually begins teaching them how to be people, how to be his people. And he gives them the Ten Commandments and he starts to give them these regulations or guidelines or principles for living. And he starts to set up a nation. And right in that season, what God starts to do is he institutes this idea. Again, it's not a new idea. It's one he's pulling back again from the book of Genesis, but he's reintroducing it to his people. He's like, listen, you are a people who do not know how to stop. For 400 years, you've been in forced manual labor. And now that you are a never stop working people, here's one of the big 10 things I need you to understand if you're going to be my people. You are not a machine made to produce all the time. You are a human being and you need to rest and you need to delight. And so as they move out of Egypt and out of slavery, God takes them into the desert and he begins to teach them about Sabbath. In Deuteronomy 5, 12 through 15, it says, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. There it is again, holy. It's a holy day. As the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do work, neither you nor your son or daughter. And it goes through. I mean, all the way down to animals, donkeys, no foreigners residing in your towns. You may rest as you do. Verse 15, remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. And then check this out. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath. He's like, listen, I created you in the book of Genesis. I showed you how to rest. God's like, not because I needed to rest, but I showed you a pattern of rest. And then you went into slavery and you learned how to be a never stop working kind of people. And so what I want you to do is I want you to remember that you were slaves in Egypt and you never stopped working, but God brought you out. And as he brought you out, here's what you need to remember, therefore, that you should observe the Sabbath day. And there in the book of Exodus, in the book of Deuteronomy, we see as God is establishing his nation, he reintroduces and establishes this idea of Sabbath. It is a holy day. It is otherworldly. It is set apart and it's special. And he teaches a never stop working people to stop and to delight. And I think that even in this year, in our kind of people, a lot of us are a never stop working kind of people. And we actually wear that as a badge, don't we? How are you? Oh, I'm busy. I got a lot going on. And we're a never stop working kind of people. I even, there's like hashtags on social media, like never take a day off or never a day off or hashtag grind or whatever, whatever you want to say. We hold that up as a badge of honor in our culture of, I don't need a day off. I don't ever take a day off. I don't ever stop. I don't ever rest. Well, you know what? God never needed to rest, but he actually established a pattern of rest and showed us how to do that and actually spoke to a never stop working kind of people, the same kind of people that we might be. And he said, you need to learn to stop and delight. Why? Because I brought you out of slavery. You're not slaves. You need to stop. You're people. And so the people were in need of rest. And I love that if, as you look in the Old Testament and you study this idea of rest, the Bible in the Hebrew actually uses two main words for rest. There's some others that it uses, but there's two main words. And the first is Shabbat. And that actually just literally means to stop. Just stop, just cease. And then the second word is nuach, which actually means to settle in. It actually means to hunker down or to like to set up a tent or to establish a city. It's a settling in. That's a resting. It's like you've been on a journey for a long day and you get to the city or you get to the resting place and you actually kind of unpack your suitcase. You actually open it up and you kind of settle in. Maybe for us in a modern day, we would be traveling. You'd get into your hotel room after a long day of traveling. You'd close and lock the door. You'd be in your room and you'd kind of go like, and you'd kind of settle in and be present where you are. That's the idea of rest. And the Bible uses both of these two terms. It's a dualistic idea of rest. It's a dualistic idea of Sabbath, of resting. Genesis 2:2-3 says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. On the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. The word, the Hebrew word is Shabbat. In Exodus 20:11, it says, for in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them. And then he rested. And that word there is nuach. He rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and he hallowed it. Here's what I want you to see is that this idea of Sabbath actually has two components to it. It is to cease or to stop. And then it is to settle in or to actually be present where you are. That there's those two ideas. And we might frame up those two ideas in this idea of rest and delight. Rest and actually be aware of your surroundings and be fully present and actually take on the joy or settle into the joy that is all around you, to delight in God and in his gifts. So to rest and to delight. And those two ideas are all the way back to the book of Genesis, but God reintroduces them to his people over and over and over again. In Exodus 23:12, it says, for 6 days you are to do your work. Here's the application, right, of this. For 6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh day you must cease, so that your ox and your donkey may rest and the son of your maidservant may be, check this out, refreshed, as well as the foreign resident. So you're going to stop working and then you're going to be refreshed. You're going to stop and you're going to delight. You're going to stop and you're going to be present. You're going to rest and you're going to be refreshed. And I was studying this years ago and I remember looking at this website called Bim Bam, which I had never been to because I'm not Jewish, but it actually is a website that their mission statement is to, it's dedicated to demystifying Judaism. And as I went and I studied this out, actually through the kind of Jewish culture here, I ran across this quote I want to share with you. It says, Sabbath is the single most important building block of living a Jewish life according to pretty much everyone. So as I went and studied this out, they're like, look, if you want to understand what it means to be Jewish, if you want to understand what it means to be God's people, here's the first initial important building block of living a Jewish life. It's Sabbath. It's learning to stop and to delight. And again, the Sabbath is holy. It is otherworldly. It is set apart. So that's the first thought. The second thought today is Sabbath is not an issue of convenience. It is an issue of countercultural spirituality. I'll say it again. Sabbath is not an issue of convenience. It is an issue of countercultural spirituality or discipline. And here's what's so interesting to me is we think of Sabbath as a day off. And so we think of it as an issue of convenience. Oh, well, you know, someday when I get everything routed around, I'll take a day to Sabbath. You know, it's just not really a good season for me right now to do this. And so we think about Sabbath in terms of convenience. We don't often think about Sabbath as a countercultural spiritual life or spiritual living. And that's how we need to think about it if we're ever going to experience this. That's how we have to think about it. Here's the idea. We do inconvenient things when they're vital, right? You sleep every night, or at least you do pretty much every night, because it's so important. And if you don't do it, everything else breaks down. We eat because if we don't eat, then everything else begins to break down. And the same idea of sleeping and physically sleeping and eating, we have to learn how to stop, to cease, and how to be present, how to delight. These are not issues of convenience. These are issues of spiritual disciplined living, countercultural living, a kingdom living. Listen, I am not a machine. You are not a machine. This is way bigger than a day off or a hobby. This is not a luxury. This is not a convenience. This is trusting God and obediently ordering our life in such a way that we experience true kingdom life. That's what this is about. Sabbath is not an issue of convenience. It's an issue of countercultural spirituality. Exodus 34, verse 21. I love this. This is so powerful. Again, God teaching his people how to be his people, how to experience his kind of life. He says this. He says, 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Check this out. Even during the plowing season and harvest, you must rest. There it is. There's all the excuses out the window. You go, it's a busy season for me. I just don't really have the time. Hey, I have young kids. Hey, this is really difficult. Well, you know what? This isn't about convenience. It's about a countercultural spiritual discipline. Now, I'm going to talk about this in just a moment. This is not religion. This is not shame or condemnation. And I'll show you that here in just a second. But what we have to do is we have to remove the excuse that we give ourselves of, well, it's just not convenient. It's like, no, it's not convenient. It will never be convenient. Sleeping for 6 to 8 hours a night is also not convenient. It's not. Eating, if you really think about it, is really not convenient, but it is necessary. And Sabbath might not be convenient, but it's necessary. And it is countercultural. It's countercultural kingdom life. In the book of Exodus, chapter 16, we see the Israelites, again, in the desert, and they're being created into God's people, and manna starts to fall from heaven. God is teaching them, and this is a whole different sermon, but God's teaching them to depend upon him for their resources and their sustenance. He's actually literally raining food down every day, and it gathers as dew in the morning, the Bible says, and they go out and they collect it. They're learning a daily dependence upon God. That's what he's teaching them, how to be his people. But as he's doing that process, what he says is, hey, every seventh day, I don't want you to go out and collect the manna. So what I want you to do is on the sixth day, I want you to collect double. And hey, he said, here's the deal. If you collect double on the second day for the third day, it's going to rot in the jar overnight. It's not going to work. But on the sixth day, I want you to collect double, because on the seventh day, I want you to rest. I want you to stop and I want you to delight. And so there's this whole idea where he's teaching them to depend on him with manna, but then there's this other lesson kind of embedded in where he's teaching them about Sabbath. He's teaching them about resting. And in Exodus 16, the next chapter, right after, or the same chapter, I'm sorry, verses later, after he's introduced this idea of manna, he says this, "Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instruction? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days." So on the sixth day, you're going to get ready for the seventh day. That's the only day. And then everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. Nobody's to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. Now, here's the idea. That's a command from God, right? And we say, this is not convenience. This is countercultural spiritual living. So the question that gets kind of brought up here is this religion or is this restoration? That's the way I want to frame it for us. Is it religion or is it restoration? And I would say we can look at it as a religious doctrine that needs to be upheld, but I would like you to think about it in terms of restoration. And for the Pharisees, as we move ahead to the New Testament, Jesus and the Pharisees had a conversation about Sabbath, actually several. You know, Jesus did most of his healing on the Sabbath, which is really interesting, and that's maybe a whole nother sermon too, but he almost always is doing his healing on the Sabbath, which is really fascinating. I think he's still doing, by the way, a lot of healing on the Sabbath. Selah. There's a whole message in and of itself. But in the New Testament, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, and I wrote this down in my notes. For the Pharisees, the Ten Commandments provided great restriction that was punishable by death. But for Jesus, the law outlined great freedom that led to real life. And so it was the same concept or outline or the same rule, but the Pharisees looked at it as something that was restrictive and punishable, where Jesus was looking at it as something that outlined the way life actually works. And when we think about Sabbath, Jesus actually introduces this idea of, hey, Sabbath was a good idea, but don't do it by just this religious, like, dutiful thing. Do it because it's actually the way of living. It's the way of life. And in Mark 2, he's having this back and forth with the Pharisees about Sabbath, and they're pressing him. They're like, look, you're not keeping the law. You're not doing what you need to do on Sabbath. You're not truly taking the day by the letter of the law. And Jesus responds to them, and he says this. He says in verse 27, this is Mark 2, and you can read about the whole thing, Mark 2, 24 through 28. But in verse 27, Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Verse 28, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. What Jesus was saying is, look, this isn't a law that you have to get up under religiously and it's going to like mandate on you. He says, look, this is actually a law that was created for you. The Sabbath was actually created for mankind, for men and women, for you to actually experience life. This is a gift to you. This is not just a religious duty. This is actually something that's restorative. It's a gift. The Sabbath is a gift. And in Isaiah 58, 11 through 12, I'll read this to you. Check this out. The Lord will guide you always. Isaiah 58, 11, actually I'll read through 14. Isaiah 58, 11 through 14. The Lord will guide you always. He will, watch this, satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land. Who thinks that sounds like a good idea? I like that idea. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land, and he will strengthen your frame. So satisfy your needs in a dry place, strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden. That sounds good. Like a spring whose waters never fail. I like that. Verse 12, your people will rebuild the ancient ruins. They will rise up age-old foundations. You will be called repairers of broken walls, restorers of streets with dwellings. That all sounds good. Verse 13, if you... Okay, so we've got all this whole list of amazing things. God's going to satisfy our needs and strengthen our frame, and we're going to be like a well-watered garden, and our spring will never fail, and we will rebuild ancient ruins, and we'll see justice and oppression vanquished as we raise up age-old foundations, and we repair broken walls, and there will be restoration of streets, and we will be restorers of streets with dwellings. If you, and then fill in the blank, and we might think like, if you pray a lot, which that's sure, part of it. If you read your Bible all the time, sure, that might be part of it. If you fill in the blank, whatever you think it might be, but watch this, verse 13. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath, from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight, right? It's not a religious duty, but it's actually a gift. If you call the Sabbath a delight, and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way, producing and not doing as you please or speaking out of words, then you will find joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your fathers, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. That's some power right there. That is some power-packed stuff. If you do not break the Sabbath, those are the things that will happen. And here's what I would say it like this. His commandments are for us. Our obedience is for our benefit. Our obedience is for our benefit. This is not about legalism. This is about blessing. And in 1 John 5, 3, it says, for this is the love of God, that you keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. And this is not legalism. It's blessing. Mark 2, 27, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. This is countercultural, you guys. This is not convenience. This is counterculture. And I will tell you even that this is even spiritual warfare, because, you know, the enemy likes to, John 10:10, for the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Do you know, it's really hard for the enemy to steal, kill, and destroy from people that are actually fully present, that are well-rested, that are engaged in developing their relationships. It's hard for the enemy to wreck, ruin, or destroy the life of people who are resting, fully present to the moment, emotionally healthy, and happy in God. It's hard to sabotage those kind of people. And so here's the deal. It is about countercultural spiritual warfare. It is about disciplining ourselves, not convenience, but actually leaning in. And it's an obedience and a trust and ordering our life according to God's blessing for us, not a religious duty. Number three, the third idea, and again, to recap too, Sabbath is not an issue of convenience. It's an issue of countercultural spirituality. Number three, Sabbath is about practice, not perfection. Sabbath is about practice, not perfection. If this isn't like a religious, just straight religious dutiful thing, then it isn't about, oh, I keep it or not. It is about practicing Sabbath. It isn't legalism, so you can't succeed or fail at it. You either practice it or you don't. It's a practice. It's a spiritual practice, a spiritual discipline. So I know for a lot of people, they tried it once and they're like, oh, I tried that. It just doesn't work for me. Or people are like, well, I'm just not good at this. Or somebody might say like, well, I have young kids and it's just not really the season for me to do that. Or you know, hey, here's the deal. Just start practicing. This isn't pass fail. This is practice. This is not legalism. So you don't succeed or fail. You either practice or you don't. And as I said, it's hard for the enemy to wreck, ruin, and destroy people who are leaning in and resting and delighting in God. So keep at it. Don't give up. Just keep practicing. And so Jesus introduces himself, by the way, and again, this is a whole nother sermon too. Jesus introduces himself as the fulfillment of Sabbath rest. Jesus introduces himself as the Lord of the Sabbath. We just read it in Mark 2. Jesus is our Sabbath rest. But the thing is that we practice that rest. In Matthew 11, 28, Jesus says this. He says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest for your souls. But here's what's interesting. It says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest for your souls. You have to come to him. And one of the ways of coming to him, one of the ways of being the people of God, we've been reading it all morning here, is this idea of Sabbath. And again, some people say, well, that was in the Ten Commandments. We don't have to do that anymore. Well, here's the deal. God actually introduced Sabbath rest on day 6 and 7 of creation in Genesis, like hundreds of years before the law ever was introduced. And so the idea is actually integrated into the fabric of God's interaction with humanity from the very, very beginning. And so Jesus comes and he says, hey, I am now the Sabbath rest. Actually, again, in Luke 4, Jesus goes into the desert. You guys may remember this story. And then as he comes out of the desert, he actually integrates back into society after he's been in the desert. And in Luke 4, he reads this verse about himself as a prophetic, prophetically clarifying or declaring about himself. It says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free. And then check this out, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And if you go research that, that actually is about the Sabbath rest. And then actually there's this whole pattern in the Old Testament where they would take every seventh day off, and then every seventh year, they would actually let the fields or the land rest so that the fields and the land didn't produce. And then actually 7 times 7, you can actually keep going. Eventually it gets to the year of Jubilee or the year of the Lord's favor. And it's where all the debts are forgiven and everything kind of resets and reestablishes, and they cease producing, and they actually rest. They Shabbat, they stop, and then they delight. They're present. And so Jesus is actually saying, look, that's why I'm here, to be the Sabbath rest for you. Jesus actually goes to the cross, goes into the grave, and then he actually resurrects on the 8th day, which is a new beginning. It's a new kind of Sabbath rest. And again, for the Pharisees, the Ten Commandments and Sabbath rest were a restriction punishable by death. For Jesus, it was a law outlined a great freedom that led to real life. And so here's the premise of this, is that we need to, and in point three here, Sabbath is about practice, not perfection, is we've already been given Sabbath rest through Jesus, but we need to practice the gift. We need to utilize or use the gift we've been given. I love this analogy, but you know, it is far, far from Christmas right now, but maybe some of you have birthdays. Pastor Eric and I have birthdays coming up in the next month or two. We have an anniversary coming up too, and then there's Mother's and Father's Day. So it's going to be like crazy gift central around the Hayes house for the next couple months. But when you are given something as a gift, there's things that then you have to actually use them. So like if someone gifts me a radio, I can actually literally be in ownership of that radio. But if I don't plug the radio in and I don't actually hit, you know, the power button and I actually start to play something on that, then I can actually own the gift but not be experiencing the benefit of the gift that I've already been given and already received. And I think that Sabbath and experiencing Jesus is like that. You guys, all through the Bible, we're given these outlines about how we're supposed to be pausing and stopping and resting in God. We're supposed to Shabbat, we're supposed to stop, and then we're supposed to settle in. We're supposed to actually settle in with God on these days and practice what we've been given. So how do we practice Sabbath? I want to give you 4 super practicals. These are practices, and I actually got these from John Mark Comer. I want to give him credit for this. And he actually recommends implementing these over a 4-week period. Because he's like, look, if you just start cold turkey, like you were cold turkey, and then you just jump in and you try to introduce all four of these things, you're probably not going to practice well. So maybe start to like drip these and introduce these over a month period. But I want to give you four super practical practices about how you can practice Sabbath rest in your life. So number one, exercise one. Practice one is to set a day or a time period. So you have to actually step back and look at your calendar and say, what is the period of time when we're actually going to stop, where we're actually going to cease, we're going to stop working, we're going to rest. Dallas Willard says this in his Sabbath training. Dallas Willard has Sabbath training. He says, do nothing. Don't try to make anything happen. He's like, the goal of stopping is, ready, profound, stop. Like the goal is don't do anything. Just stop. Just Shabbat, just Sabbath, stop. The first part is just stop. I remember years ago, I listened to a guy do a message and he talked about the Hebrew word Shabbat. And he said, one of the ways that it's used in the Hebrew language is this idea of playing fetch with a dog. And you know how when you play fetch with a dog, you have a stick or a ball and you actually throw it out. You'll see all the kind of beautiful interlaces of this. The master will throw the ball out and the dog will actually run and grab it and then bring it back. And you, as many of you who know us, we have a dog, her name is Ruby, and she'll go out and grab the ball and she'll bring it back. But she does this thing when she gets back to us, she'll actually run around with the ball in her mouth. And I'll say like, hey, drop it. You know, hey, Ruby, drop it. Because until she drops it, the master can't actually pick that thing up and actually throw it out again. But what's interesting is if I throw the ball out and she goes and gets it and brings it back, there's a rhythm and a pattern to this where I throw it out, she goes and gets it, she brings it back, I say drop it, she drops it, and then we have a moment, right? Where I pick the ball back up as the master again, and we might even like, I might have a moment to kind of engage, and I might like, you know, rustle her ears or whatever, and you're a good girl, and you know, and then there's a moment where we stop and she drops it, she Shabbats, she drops it, and then we engage in intimacy, and then the master throws it out again, and then she back off again, and there we go. And there's this really real idea for us as where Shabbat is about dropping it. It's about taking the thing, even something maybe God has called you to, or put a dream in your heart or whatever. It might be really good things, but there's things that we chase down for 6 days. And the master says on day 7, Shabbat, you drop it, drop it. And I want you to drop it. And I don't want the anxiety of you running. And what I want you to drop it. And I want to have some intimacy with you. And then guess what? I'll pick it up and throw it. And the next day we'll go back at it again and it'll be good. But just drop it. And so exercise one is setting a day or time to drop it, to stop, to cease. And here's the deal. A full 24 hours, I think, is ideal. That is my conviction from Scripture. I think the Bible talks about 6 days and then the seventh day of rest. I think ideally is 24 hours. That could even be from like a sundown to sundown, like a Friday night to a Saturday night. That's currently how we do it. But start where you are. And again, this is not legalism, you guys. So if you're like, there's just no way I could get to a 24-hour period, great. Start with a 4-hour period. Start with a 6-hour period. Start with what you can start with. But here's the first exercise or principle is you have to set a time where you're going to stop, where you're going to drop it, where you're going to Shabbat and you're going to stop. And I would suggest having a beginning ritual and an end ritual to that time. Make it special. We have a psalm that we read together as a family to start our Sabbath on Friday nights. I know some people light candles. I know there are different people that do different kinds of things. But first, exercise one is you actually got to take the obedient step, the courageous, faith-filled step of being countercultural and saying, I am not a machine made to produce 7 days a week. I actually need to stop. And I'm going to establish that on my calendar. I'm going to set a day to stop. Exercise two is to establish a preparation day. So here's the idea is manna would come down and God told them, hey, on day 6, I want you to gather for 2 days. Why? Because you still have to eat on day 7. But I don't want you to go out and gather on day 7, but it's good to eat on day 7. So in the Jewish culture, they have something called preparation day. We've actually started talking about this a lot over the last year. It's been kind of a revelation to us. But the idea is that you actually get ready to rest. And again, we're not talking about legalism. So like if, you know, it's the Sabbath and you're like, oh my gosh, I wasn't able to XYZ. You've got to, that's between you and the Lord. Like have that talk. But here's the day. If you're going to take a day to stop and to rest and to delight, that takes some preparation work. So take a day. So again, remember, exercise one, you're going to establish a day to rest. to Sabbath. The second exercise is you're going to establish a preparation day, the day when you do your housework, the day when you go and you buy groceries or you prep meals or you do whatever, whatever that might be. And again, guys, I understand there's seasons to all these things. Hey, this, remember, this is not pass fail. This is not legalism. Well, you're doing it bad. This is practice. This is figuring out how to stop and to delight, how to rest and delight. So, but the second exercise is to establish a preparation day. That's really going to help. Exercise three, the third thing that we need to do is we need to define our relationship with technology during that Sabbath period. For some, we need a digital detox. And here's the thing. Obviously, the Bible doesn't talk about iPhones because it was written before there were iPhones. But there are principles in the Bible that talk about Shabbat, stop, or settle in, be present, delight. And so here's the deal. For some of us, we just need to get super practical here, and I'll be your pastor, being your pastor, but I'll like press in and be your pastor for a minute. Like some of us need to shut our phones off for 24 hours. And they've done research on this, you guys. It is like there are withdrawal symptoms to this. This is a legitimate thing. Like we are addicted to the devices in our hands. There's anxiety that comes with that. There's something that they call, you actually can study this. It's called a ghost reach. It's where you reach for your phone, but it isn't there. I did this. I went out to Revel Retreat in Colorado years ago. I've been out there several times, but and they actually ask you to lock your phone in a safe for 3 days, and they give it back to you at the end of the retreat. And they don't make you do that. You can put it in your room, and there's other things there, but basically they're like, we're going to get off our phones. And I will tell you, the first night at dinner, I kept reaching for my phone. Any lull in the conversation, I reached for my phone. And I realized, man, I am addicted to this little thing that's in my phone or in my pocket called the phone. It's like a drug. But here's the deal. That will pass and you get used to it. And so here's the deal, you guys. You just need to define what your relationship with your technology is going to look like on that day. For some of us, it's turning technology off entirely. For some of us, we love our technology, and it is in some ways we may be restorative to us. I want to challenge you and, again, press on you on that a little bit. You probably don't need tech as much as you think you do. But I know for a lot of us, you know, a video chat with family members can be fulfilling. I know for a lot of us, a good movie, can be really fulfilling. So anyway, you have to do what you feel called to do. But I will challenge you with this. If you think this is too legalistic or too far or too impractical, I want to challenge you to try it for a full month. For four times, just on your Sabbath, limit your phone. And you know what? At the end of those 4 months, if you're like, you know what? I don't feel a marked increase in love and joy and peace. That has not been therapeutic for me. I actually think it's been detrimental. Then go ahead and just turn your phone back on and feel free to do that. But I want to challenge you with that. And I'll just tell you that in my life, it's made a huge, huge difference. Sabbath, day off, phone off. Really, really powerful idea there. And again, let that be an encouragement and a challenge, but not legalism. I hope you guys can hear that with the spirit it's intended. Exercise four, practice four, is to cultivate a patterned attention to God. So basically, how are you going to not just chill on Sabbath? Because it is a day to stop and rest, but it's also a day to be present and to delight in the Lord and in his gifts to us. How are we patterning our attention to God? For some of us, that's there's something called a daily office, so you can read about this, but prayer morning, noon, and night, there are different ways of kind of getting at this. But basically, how are you leaning in with God? How are you coming to him to experience refreshing for your soul? It's a day to settle in with God, to get into that hotel room, open that suitcase, and with the Lord. And so how are you doing that? You need to think about patterning that. So there's four specific practices, you guys, for Sabbath. And I want to close our time with this, is that Sabbath is a made space for refreshing, but you have to practice it. And Hebrews 4, 9 through 11 says this, Hebrews 4, 9 through 11, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Again, this is New Testament. A Sabbath rest for the people of God. Verse 10, for anybody who enters God's rest also rests from their work. Are you catching that? There's the two pieces again. Resting with God and resting from your work. I'll flip it around, right? It's stopping or ceasing and then delighting in God and in his gifts. So verse 10, for anybody who enters God's rest also rests from their work, just as God did from his. Verse 11, let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following the example of disobedience. What was the example of disobedience? The example of disobedience was they didn't put their faith into practice. They knew what God wanted them to do, but they couldn't bring themselves to do it. And they did not enter into rest. They did not experience the promise. And I believe for us, Element Church, we are people that are gonna take seriously the invitation from God to have a season of rest for our soul, that every 7 days, every 6 days, we stop, we pause, we Shabbat, we stop, we drop it, and we rest, we settle in, we delight with God, and we're fully present. And you guys, we should take every effort to enter into that rest. We need to put our faith into practice, self-propelled discipleship. So it's time for us to learn and to practice Sabbath rest. It's not a law, it's a gift, and it's about stopping and resting and delighting in God and in his gifts to us. Let me pray over us. Father, thank you for today. God, I pray that this word would not just be a word in principle, but it would be a word in practice. God, I pray for each and every person that we would have the courage to implement this in our own life. God, that we would remember that this is not about convenience, but it's about countercultural spiritual life. And so, God, I pray just that courage over us, and I pray that discipline over us, and I pray that we would remember that this is not legalism, this is about blessing. God, our obedience is for our benefit. And so, God, I pray that for each and every one of us, that we would ask ourselves the question today, what did we hear today? What was the thing that stuck out most to us today? And what do we need to do this week because of it? And I pray the courage to hear and to do based on this word today. And God, I want to pray too for anybody who's never started a relationship with you. They've never surrendered their life to you. If that's you today and you've never done that, pray this with me. Just say, God, thank you for your son, Jesus. I believe he came and died on the cross to pay for my sin. I received that sacrifice on my behalf. And I start a relationship with you today, God, by surrendering my life to you and asking you, Jesus, to come into my life and to have every part of me. Thank you for loving me. Thank you for giving for me. And thank you that you made a way for me to have rest in my soul. I receive that from you today in Jesus' name. Amen. Awesome, you guys. Well, hey, if you prayed that prayer with us for the first time today, would you text the keyword element to 97,000? We have a little link that'll come back. Click it. You'll fill out a form. On that form, there's a box that says, I made a commitment to Jesus today. Click that. There's also a box that says, I'd like to be baptized. If you've never done that and you'd like to, click that. Let us know. We love you. We are celebrating with you, and we want to invite you to be part of Element Church. Let us know how we can help, how we can serve you. And hey, for Element, for the rest of us, we're going to move into a time of worship, but I just want to challenge us with this today. What is God speaking to you today from this word, and what do you need to do this week because of it? And I challenge you, and I impress upon you, have the courage to do it, you guys. Our obedience is for our benefit. Let's go and listen for the Lord's voice, and let's worship him this morning together.